Welcome to The Rundown. I'm your host, Justin Pugliese. This podcast is dedicated to you, the run community. Each episode, we bring you interviews with top athletes and community leaders. They'll share their stories, tips, and tricks to inspire and motivate you to keep running. Ultimately, we're all just here to have fun. From elite runners to weekend warriors, find out how people get started and why they keep going. So listen up, tell your run buddies, and don't forget to subscribe. You can find us on Apple Music, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. Previously on The Rundown with Lisa Jordan.
I run because I can. It's, at first I thought it was a stupid sentence, but it really, it always sticks with me because I'm not sick. I'm not in a bad mental state. I'm like, I have all these awesome things that are just here and that I don't always realize. So I thought, I'll finish that marathon because I can.
On this episode of The Rundown, I sat down with the most recent winner of the Ultra Trail Huracana 65K, Olivier Collin. Growing up, he specialized in cross-country racing, and later on, in the 1500 meter at the collegiate level. He's always been a fast guy, but when frustrating injuries came into play, he was forced to change paths and pursue academics. Now, Olivier has found his passion for running again, this time through the trails. He's racing for fun, but with talent like his, it's been tough to keep him off the leaderboard in his first season of ultras. This episode of The Rundown is proud to be sponsored by eloendurance.ca, your one-stop online shop for all your nutrition needs. Training for a marathon is not only tough on the body, but it's time-consuming as well. I know personally, I'm constantly juggling my runs with work, family, and friends. The one thing that always seems to take a backseat is my on-course nutrition. I'm always rushing to the store the day before my race to grab gels and settle for whatever flavors are still in stock. eloendurance.ca makes ordering your favorite gels, chews, and hydration mixes simple and easy. They're a small family-run business that understands the needs of endurance athletes and loves staying connected with this growing community. With the ability to mix and match your favorite flavors at bulk pricing and quick shipping right to your door across Canada, eloendurance.ca can help keep up with the pace of your busy schedule. To help make them your new favorite nutrition supplier, eloendurance.ca has generously offered all the Rundown listeners 15% off your next order. Just type in the promo code LORUNDOWN15 at checkout and let eloendurance.ca help fuel your next run, ride, or hike. 2 weekends ago was another great one for running in Canada. It was a Toronto Waterfront Marathon, which was also the Canadian Marathon World Championships, and a chance for Olympic hopefuls to qualify for Tokyo 2020. Trevor Hofbauer finished first among men, with a time of 2 hours, 9 minutes, and 51 seconds, qualifying him for the upcoming Olympics. The interesting part about his victory was that he ran without a watch. He finds that training and racing with a pace on your wrist can dictate how the run will go. Trevor discovered this when he was running with Olympian Eric Gillies, who didn't run at a pace. So when he decided to try doing the same, it stuck. It's an interesting concept and definitely something runners should try. Run on time and effort instead of focusing on pace. If you ever doubt yourself in a race, consider leaving your GPS at home. On the women's side, Dana Pitereski came in first with a huge personal best and Olympic standard 2 hours, 29 minutes, and 3 seconds. Her best time before that was 2 hours, 36 minutes, and 8 seconds. Absolutely incredible. Dana ran what many called a gutsy race, coming out strong in the first half and fading near the end. The important part was that she got it done and secured herself a spot on the Canadian Olympic team in Tokyo 2020. She's an unsponsored athlete who went all in on herself and came out on top. In other news, female running legend Shalane Flanagan has announced her retirement from professional running. She had an amazing career and is an icon in the sport. Some notable performances are her silver medal finish at the 2008 Olympic Games, where she ran the 10,000 meter in 30 minutes 22 seconds, as well as her win at the New York City Marathon in 2017. She certainly paved the way for women's running in the US and will be remembered as one of the greatest to lace them up. Make sure to check the show notes for links and more information. That's all for now. Gotta run. A few years ago, I raced my first ultra trail at Huracana. It was the 65K. It was in brand new shoes. It was quite an experience. But today, my guest on the show actually has won that same event this year. And I'd like to welcome Olivier Cullen.
Thanks for having me, Justin. I feel like we've been planning this talk for about a year now, so happy to see it's actually happening.
Yeah, exactly. It's been a long time coming, but finally get to sit down and have a chat. Maybe it's the win that sparked it, but...
Maybe.
Let's get started with kind of like where did you grow up and what was the upbringing like for Olivier?
Yeah, so I actually grew up in Ontario in a small military town, just outside of Barrie, a little town called Borden. So my dad was in the military, but retired pretty early, and we just kind of ended up staying in Ontario. But was able to go to school out there for better part of my life, and then moved to Quebec when I was in secondaire 3. And yeah, been in Quebec ever since, kind of took up a little bit more of the running game as I moved to Quebec, and yeah, kind of never looked back.
So your parents' background, like Colin, is that is it French only, or because you grew up?
I think it's all my family's from Quebec, so it's more pronounced Colin. Okay. But a lot of people like to add an S on the end of that and make it their own version of my name, but that's okay. It's Olivier Colin. Yeah.
So where did the love for running come? And like, was it running first for you, or was it another sport?
No, it's always been. Well, I was a soccer player all my life, but I was always in the position of. Running was definitely my my strong suit, so my coach would always put me kind of a midfield, and I was playing defense, I was playing offense, and just kind of running back and forth along the field. I was kind of the guy that was never really getting tired, and so really kind of evolved from that over the years. I had a lot of ankle sprains through soccer and just naturally fell away from soccer just because I couldn't really put a season together or anything like that, and then running kind of eventually came through my elementary years. We were running cross-country races, as most schools do, and I was actually winning them pretty consistently. And one year, just kind of randomly, my phys ed coach or teacher decided to take me on to the next races within the calendar, and which was kind of unusual for our school to do. And I was kind of the only guy going. So yeah, so just kind of evolved from there, and then kind of really, it was a one-year thing, and didn't really step or really dabble with running that much afterwards. Kind of got back into soccer, and then really kind of running came about when I was in moved to Quebec. Our school would run an annual 5K at the end of the year, and ended up finishing second or third, I forget. And then my coach the next cross country year kind of recruited me based on those results, and kind of the rest is kind of history. We can just kind of evolve from there. Really got into running, got into really more of the track and field events, so the 800 meters, 1500 meters, and obviously the cross country season every fall.
And what was your preference at that point? Like, were you enjoying, like, because you went from like 5K, let's say, to then shorter stuff?
Was yeah. That like... Yeah, so I always had a strong suit for the shorter kind of middle distance events. I was definitely a guy that saw myself when I first started. Being in the Olympics in the 800 meters was kind of always the goal, but I think my coach at the back of his mind always had the longer, the 1500 or the mile in the back of his mind. But I kind of enjoyed it all, especially when you're a bit younger. Obviously, when you're doing well in a certain event, you just kind of want to keep performing in that event. So the 800 meter was working really well for me at the time, and we just kind of stayed with that event for most of my career, but kind of gradually evolved over the course of the years through the 1500 meters and the mile.
Mm. Yeah. And how was the training at that point? Like, was it always fun for you, or was it challenging taking on that much training, and like what kind of effects did it have on your body?
Yeah, I think I was pretty fortunate meeting the coach I had. So I was a member of the Club d'Athlétisme Vaudreuil Dorion for all my life, and the coach Claude David was a little more a little more on the safe side of volume, so we never really did very high volume. Our training was pretty low key, but we still focused on that high performance focus. But it was pretty safe. It wasn't really keeping it fun was kind of the main focus of the practice, and keeping us healthy was definitely always at the back of his mind. So I was fortunate enough to fall on him and really have a good relationship. And over the years, it's kind of evolved over more of like a partnership. He would obviously write the workouts, and I would have my say in how they were brought up in practice, and how we could kind of maybe tweak them based on how my body was feeling every week. But it was definitely kind of always focusing on injury, kind of managing our risk of injury and all that. Mm-hmm. So,
and what was the focus like in the training? Like what did a plan look like for you, like in terms of volume? And
For most of kind of 800 meter build, was mileage was pretty low. So I was running, I didn't really track volume back then. It was mostly minute based. Didn't really keep a track or an online log of anything. But it was mostly, 5 or 6 days a week, we'd always take a day off, either on the weekend or on Mondays. And then we'd have two organized group sessions on the track, Monday and Wednesday for the most part. And then Saturday was going to be like a longer, more like tempo, shorter tempos. It would vary a lot depending on cross-country season, indoor season, outdoor season. Mm-hmm. But we would never really run. I would probably be around like the 50K maybe a week. And then over the years, obviously, it would kind of ease my way up into more volume. But it's never really been, until my university years, really been a focus of tracking mileage and all that. It was just kind of show up to practice and do your recovery runs in betweens. So maybe like 20 to 40 minutes, depending on the days and depending on the calendar. And so it was kind of a gradual build over many years. But it's kept me involved in the sport and avoid any potential burnout.
Which happens a lot, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Has he always been your coach, Claude, or have you switched it up or been forced to with different running programs? And
yeah, so Claude was kind of was always involved in my programming, but Claude kind of definitely took on more of like a kind of almost a father role over the years, where he was my coach for so many years. But then when I actually went to a Division I school in Fresno State for a year, so obviously he wasn't really as involved in the programming, but he received all my logs, all the plans were actually sent to him, so he's always kind of keeping an eye on what I was doing. And then when I went to University of Victoria a few years afterwards, obviously we were still in touch, but not necessarily in terms of writing the plans and all that.
And like you spoke about, like the Olympics and stuff like that, did academic take a precedent over your athletic career at that point, or what were your thoughts kind of like as you went along in the sport?
No, academics was always kind of at the back of my mind, but I was able to juggle both pretty well. I think for me, what kind of took its toll was injuries did eventually kind of creep up on me. Had suffered a lot of back pain, hip pain, and that's kind of disabling for me in terms of running consistently for over a year, which is actually a pretty common problem in our sport. And but academics was really never a struggle. I was fortunate enough to be on a full scholarship at Fresno State for a year. Unfortunately, it didn't work out for me for multiple different reasons, and I chose to leave shortly after my first year, and decided to go to University of Victoria. But no, academics was actually, I was pretty fortunate to have academic on my side, because it was allowing me to be on scholarships over there, keep the education bills a little lower, and progress on that. But in terms of the Olympics, it was definitely other factors than academics. It was more my body breaking down a little bit.
What did your speed get to in the 800s? Like, what's your...
My PB?
Yeah.
So I got to, I think it was 2010 was my PB. I ran 146.21.
Wow.
And then that same year, I think I ran 338.25 in the 1500 meters. So yeah, it was a good season, but also it was kind of the pinnacle of my career in terms of performances. But then kind of right after that season, I started having disabling back pain, difficulty walking, difficulty obviously running. And that's kind of what led me on a kind of a different path from 2010 onwards.
So you say like you had all these injuries, like looking back, it's funny, like no pun intended there, looking back on your back issues, was there something that you pinpoint that caused that? Or I'm just talking here like from a, you know, I worry about it too, like increasing my volume in marathon training. And is there something that I can do to help that? Looking back, was there something you feel like you could have done to maybe have a longer shelf life? Like,
Prevention. And
like back in school. And
It's hard because, like, obviously, you know this, but I'm doing a master's in physiotherapy right now. So it's definitely been part of my reflection over the past couple of years as I've been going through school, looking at could I have done something differently? Could I have changed anything? And it's hard to say in retrospect. Obviously, potentially increases in volume, increases in speed, rapid increasing the amount of races in a calendar year as well. That performance series was kind of done in Europe. So it was my first time in Europe. So a lot of factors. But we look at our tissue, our biology, and we see that, you know, yes, I had back pain. I got an MRI. I had a herniated disc. Was that really what was causing my pain? Maybe, maybe not. Could I have prevented anything or, you know, acted a bit differently, gone to the gym a bit more? You know, there's so many factors that could have potentially impacted my injury. At the time, though, it was more of a kind of a reactive state, and I was just like, okay, I can't run. So obviously it kind of leads like a cascade of events. It was kind of a struggle with just my mental well-being of, you know, being an athlete that wants to perform, because it kind of also coincided with my beginning at Fresno State. So I moved from an athlete that was running, you know, 100K a week to being not able to run just about at all. And being followed by a different medical team, a new medical system. So there's a lot of factors that kind of intertwined, but I can't really pinpoint any specific things. I think it was definitely a factor of, or a combination of factors that led me down this kind of spiral.
Mm-hmm. And you talk about the mental side of things, like,
yeah.
How tough was that? Like,
you know what? I mean, it was my first exposure to like an injury that was actually taking a longer toll in terms of recovery. And at first it was good, but I think for me, it was really what got to it is that kind of that injury led to a couple other injuries, kind of led to kind of a, like I said earlier, like a spiral of injuries. And, you know, it's not really something that I had much control about. And it's hard when you don't have the tools or you don't really have, it's your first exposure to that. And I was in California at the time with, you know, a few good buddies, but, you know, your social support is not the same. Yeah. Family is a bit further down, and you're being exposed to a medical system that you're not really familiar with, and that's being obviously paid for by the university. And we think about the United States being, you know, a prime medical system, but in reality it is. But as a student athlete, we weren't really being referred to maybe the top clinicians or anything like that. So for me, I really kind of struggled with that difference in care that I was receiving at home versus what I was receiving in the United States, and eventually kind of led me to just make the decision to move back to Canada after my first year and get the care I thought I deserved and the care I thought I needed at the time.
And so then you moved back to Canada, and like, so why did you choose?
Yeah, so actually Victoria? In that training camp, so my first year at Fresno State, I went to a training camp and I was kind of going through injury already there, and I met a physiotherapist and ultimately my future coach as well, because he was a track coach and a physiotherapist based out of Victoria. And he was training he was one of the head coaches for the Western Canadian Athletic Hub, which they're called hubs now, but I forget what they were called back in the day. And so I kind of met him, and then ultimately we kind of got spoken, got through treatment, and I was kind of seeing him making an immediate impact on me. And he's definitely kind of the factor that made me decide to A, leave Fresno, and B, move to Victoria down the road. Yeah.
And so that was like a big chunk of your life then, right? Like
after? Yeah. So I ended up spending like 5 years there. And ultimately, at first, I was in Victoria for on and off for 2 years at first, kind of going back and forth between Montreal and Victoria for treatment, for physiotherapy, and then ultimately I moved. I just decided to stay there. Start a master or a bachelor's degree in kinesiology, and he's definitely the main factor that inspired me to go into physiotherapy. Mm-hmm. So it kind of like whole ball got rolling as of 2012, really.
And were you still running for school? Like, were you still running in Victoria?
Yeah, I was. Well, the first 2 years when I moved back to Victoria, or it might have been a year and a bit, I was just kind of really doing physio rehab to really get back to where I was. And ultimately I noticed that I still had to think about, you know, my academics, and his impact on me was definitely a positive one for inspiring a career change as well. So he kind of led me down the path of physiotherapy, and the way physiotherapy programs now work in Canada, the main way you get into a program, you get accepted into a program, is through you do a bachelor's degree in kinesiology is a popular one, but you can do a bachelor's degree in pretty much anything as long as you have a certain core number of courses. And so that's kind of what kind of led me down that path. I decided to start my kinesiology degree and then got onto that journey of 6 years later doing physiotherapy as a, my bachelor's degree was my second degree at that point. Mm-hmm. I had already done a, oddly enough, a technique policière or police degree in Quebec beforehand.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. So it was kind of a tough choice cause I knew I was embarking on a 5-6 year journey. And I was kind of already in, at age 25, you know, when I started that. So I was kind of a little bit worried like financially and all that, but I think ultimately it's the right decision. Graduate next week, so.
There you go. Yeah, congratulations. Yeah, thanks. Well, early congrats. Anything can happen there.
Yeah, I think it still failed me.
But yeah, I didn't think he would come back personally. Actually, I met you in Vancouver.
Yes.
It just came back to me, but like we ran Seaweeds.
Yeah.
In that was a crazy story.
It was.
I booked an Airbnb. Like, long story short, I booked an Airbnb in Vancouver. I got, when I showed up, they had canceled my reservation. I think the guy's line was like, I got like 3 girls coming from Vegas or something like that to stay. So he chose them over me.
Much better option over you.
And then I knew, I like reached out on Facebook, I think. And your girlfriend, Alex, was like, hey, we have a place like in a hotel room. We got 2 beds. Like we'll give you one of them. Like, you no problem. And like the night before the race, I'd slept in on a couch in a studio. Like it was like, what a horrible thing. But anyways, I'm still appreciative.
It worked out. And that's where we met for the first time. Yeah. So I was thankful of that event as well.
And you ran a pretty good race there too, I think.
Yeah, it was my first and only half marathon. Right. I went back on the line of a half marathon since. Mm-hmm. And I think I've finished second or third.
Okay.
But Seaweeds was just kind of so much fun. I worked for Lululemon back then as well. So it was a fun experience for both Alex and I, and obviously you as well. We had a fun time at the Seaweeds, I forget how they call it, not the Seaweeds after party, but the Seaweeds festival. I don't know.
The name probably changes. But I know you got into cycling too when you were out there. Did running take a backseat at that point?
So essentially what happened with me is that through those injuries, I was able to work my way back after 2012. I had a hip surgery for a condition called femoroacetabular impingement. So essentially it was kind of a slight deformation of my femoral head, which is the main bone in your hip. And they operated on me, and I was able to kind of do a proper buildup after that and ended up actually coming back pretty strong. Actually, I ran 3:41, I believe, or 3:42 at one of my, not my first race back, but a few races in. And
in which race?
It was in, they used to have, I don't know if they still have them, but it was a high performance series in Indianapolis back in the day. And they would run these twilight meets at like ridiculous hours at like 11 or midnight just to have like optimal conditions and really well organized events. And ended up running, 3:42, I think.
In which distance?
In the 1500 meters.
Okay.
And good.
I never know with you, man.
Could be 3 hours of what? 100K?
3:41 marathon, 3:41K.
Yeah, so in the 1500, but then, you know, the next day I was like barely able to walk. So I didn't really know what was going on as much as, you know, the highs of doing a great performance were very high and really rewarding. The lows on the next day when I was, you know, unable to walk properly or go for a 10-minute jog was just getting kind of crippling. So shortly after that season, I think I just kind of decided to change up a few things and more of a focus on fun. So that's when I think I joined University of Victoria and getting into their cross country spirits as well. Cross country is just kind of a different animal, and it's just more fun, less competitive. And overall, I was just having fun with cross country racing. So I kind of went down that path for a few years, and it was going pretty well, but never really got back to the level of performance that I was used to. And gradually over the years, when I graduated, I just decided to get into road cycling, but never with the intent of racing or anything like that. We had a pretty solid group of retired Vikes in Victoria kind of all getting into cycling, so it was a fun fun mood. We just go out, you know, ride and drink some coffee afterwards and call it a day. So got into cycling for a few years, and then just this year or last year, my sister oddly enough introduced me to trail running. And So she was having fun with it, and so we did offered X-Trail. They usually run it in the fall, and I had a blast. I finished, I think, third. And, yeah, after that, I was like, yeah, I want to do more. So that was a 23K, and then I think a couple months later, I just signed up for 350Ks on the same day. And then the following week, I was like, yeah, Hurricane, I can do 65. So I just kind of signed up for a bulk of races, and, yeah, I kind of never looked back.
That's crazy. Yeah, it's so it sounds like you went back, you know, with the cross country back to your roots, because that's kind of where you started with school and found the joy in running again. And
yeah, I mean, track is a beautiful sport. I love track. I'll always love track and field. But for me, it was getting to a point where I wasn't really having too much fun with it anymore. It was more of like I knew I had potential in track and field. I was always kind of set up on a course to, you know, go to the 2012 games. And when that ultimately, when I ultimately knew that wasn't going to happen, I kind of switched it up. I was like, all right, this is 2016. But then that kind of journey, or myself as an athlete, kind of evolved, and I didn't really see myself putting the same time and the same effort. Because when you're away from competition for so long, you're coming back from an injury, you're training. But then I feel like I forgot what training for an Olympic sport is, and what it, you know, what it demands of your body, what it demands in terms of your time, your commitment to the sport. So I kind of lost track on like my commitment to that. And yeah, ultimately I kind of stepped away from it. And altogether, my plan was never really to come back and trail running. My plan was just to kind of cycle, have some fun, just drink coffee and have some good times with my friends. But yeah, it's kind of a circumstance of events. I just really found pleasure in running trails that I didn't really think it was gonna have ever again with running. And on a competitive level, but trail is just such a, it's such a fun community, and such a, you know, the guys are, you know, you're an elite runner with the pack at the front, but everyone's kind of just chatting up a storm. And it's such a different mentality than both road running, in my opinion, and especially track. I mean, track is a little bit faster speed. You can't really chat in the first 400 meters.
Yeah, the beginning of any race for that matter.
Yeah, but it's like it has a highly competitive sport in trail, and then, but you still have that, you know, strong community of just like, you're sharing a moment. You're going to be running with these guys for 5 to 12 hours, depending on the event. So you might as well, you know, have some good conversations, have some good times. And at the end of the day, you know, if someone's faster on that day, great. If you finish first, great. If you finish second, great. If you finish 100th, whatever, you know?
Yeah.
It doesn't have that kind of same standard of performance, in my opinion.
Yeah, so. Cool. No, it's it's great that you, like, found the love of running again. Like, it's, one thing's clear. You know, I remember inviting you out to a track workout in the winter. And I think we were doing, like, 200s or something that day. And one thing's for sure, like, anybody that has that track background or that speed built in, it doesn't leave you, you know? So, you know, you came to the track that day. You hadn't done a workout in a long time, and you were just like, I was giving it, like, my 110%, and you were, like, well ahead of me, like, running, like, 30-second 200 meters, which, like, it doesn't even make sense. And I don't even think you were trying. It didn't even look like you were sweating.
We were doing relays as well, right? We were teams of two. My partner didn't like me that day because she was used to a little more time off.
Yeah, you get less of a break. But yeah, I think that's really interesting. Like, when you have those goals in mind, like, when you realize you're maybe not going to be able to do them, but can still find a new love for the sport and a new goal. Like, it's such a, there's so many different avenues you can take in the sport, and different, like trail running versus road running and all this stuff. Like, it's pretty awesome that you were able to still use your talent, because you're full. I mean, you have a lot of it in running. Clearly the speed doesn't, like I said, doesn't leave you, and it's translating to trail running now.
Yeah, I always was pretty fortunate to get in shape pretty quickly, whether that was track and field or whether that was kind of training for cross country. Normally, you know, I would get to University of Victoria when I first started pretty, not out of shape, but, you know, I haven't run the same intensity that the guys were running all summer. And it took me about 2 weeks to be able to kind of mesh with them. And so I was always kind of one of my strengths. I get fit pretty quickly, and kind of the same thing kind of translated in trail running. A couple races to kind of build up my endurance and experience cramping for the first times. But ultimately, at the end of the day, it's all running, and I love the sport. And I think as much as I enjoyed, you know, going for bike rides with the guys, it wasn't really kind of triggering the same fibers for me. Mm-hmm. And when I kind of discovered trail running, I was like, I think that's kind of what did it for me. Is like, I know I can come back in the sport and just maybe not necessarily my intent was never to. Or my goal was never to win any events. It was just to kind of be there and perform. But at the end of the day, I think that competitive spirit kind of comes back quickly. And I was fortunate enough to be able to put a few races where I was able to perform a little bit higher than I expected. But it also kind of led me down. Interestingly, this summer I had a low key race where it was a 21K in Massif du Sud in Beauce. And I set out there, I was, you know, kind of coming off of two races where I finished fifth at fourth at one of the races I did this summer in the 50K, and I kind of came out a little bit cocky, wanting to like reclaim a victory. And ultimately, it was the most rewarding race because I finished second, and the guy beat me in the last 5K, I believe. But I had kind of come back to my competitive drive of like wanting to win and not really caring about the process. I'm not really caring about where I was running. And it kind of brought down a huge reflection on me that summer, or that week, actually, the week after the race, where I was like, I was not having fun. I got passed, and right away I went to like, I'm not winning. This is bullshit. I should be in front of this guy. Who is this guy? And and then that was kind of the race before Hurricane, I think. And I'm happy it happened, because I don't know if I would have been able to kind of hold on with Alexandre at Hurricane, because I was just so negative. I was so performance driven, and I'm happy it happened because it brought me back to enjoying the process, enjoying, you know, the training, enjoying being outdoors running, and realizing that I'm fortunate enough to be healthy to run 60K in one go. Because you would have asked me that 5 years ago and be like, no, I can't run 100 or 1500 meters. I'm not going to be able to run 60. But I think, yeah, it's a completely different process. It's a completely different event. So, yeah.
So what's changed for you now? Like, in terms of, like, are you doing more strength training? What are your workouts look like when you're used to doing 1500? Now you're doing like 50, 60K.
Yeah. I think if I kind of look on it on a few levels, the first thing for me was mindset. Is when I was doing track, I was performance driven. I was not really process oriented. I was just wanting to get results and wanting to win. And that's kind of changed for me going into trail. I told myself, is like, I need to be in this sport more for fun. If performances happen, great. If they don't, that's fine. If I finish fifth, if I finish 100, it doesn't matter. I just want to enjoy this process. And I think that was the main thing for me, is just finding pleasure in running again. And that's kind of unloaded like a huge level of stress for me, especially when you're used to, like, I was sponsored by ASICS for a few years, and you kind of get tired of telling your sponsors that, no, you're injured, you won't be able to run, or like having to justify your position or your results. And I kind of wanted to get away from that completely. So that was the biggest thing, is mindset and orienting myself towards just doing this for myself and not doing it for anyone else. Two is, yeah, I graduated, or I'm currently going through physio school. I graduate next week. So different mindset in terms of like where the injury might be stemming from. Definitely doing a little bit of a case study with myself in terms of like, okay, if I have this problem, I'm trying to do this. Does it help? Does it not help? So kind of playing around with that and applying a bit of a more of a critical thinking to what injuries might be stemming from what, and managing them a bit differently. So that's definitely played a role in it. And then, yeah, strength training, I think, is a big, big part, underutilized part of any training program. Whether that training or strength training reduces injuries, maybe not. But I think, does it reduce any potential risk factors for injuries? I believe so. So kind of definitely been incorporating more complex lifting and just kind of trying to get a bit stronger overall. And once again, it's more on a trial basis. Curious about the role of that in injury prevention amongst runners and pretty any athlete or general population as well. Mm-hmm. So I think definitely mindset, strength training has been playing a role. And then also just kind of living a kind of a balanced life. I used to be in this, when I was running track, it was always about, you know, I was on six different diets at once, and just realizing that I just wasn't happy. And but not really being in control of my life enough to be like, I'm not really happy doing this, but I'm not really going to change anything because that's what the whole training group is doing. And living, you know, I was, when I was training in Arizona or in Victoria, we were training in the morning, kind of napping, doing nothing in the afternoon, and then going for our second run, and then eating, sleeping, and then repeat. It was so boring. And then, like, I mean, some, it worked for some guys, but for me, I was just going nuts. So now it's like, you know, I'm in PT school. I'm in, you know, I'll be working, you know, 40 hours a week in physiotherapy. So it's going to be kind of a, living more of a balanced life and kind of incorporating running as I see fit and as I want to, as opposed to like feeling like I have to go run, because if I don't go run, I'm not going to be running fast.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of performance aspect is kind of taking a background as well. So
cool. Yeah, I think like you bring up a lot of good points, and like I think it's interesting for listeners to hear that too, because like everyone wants to get faster or do the next distance or perform better.
Yeah.
Like it's but I don't know if everyone really knows how.
I think a lot, there's so many information out there. There's so many ways to get faster. And I think sometimes, especially for me, it's like you kind of overcomplicate things. You look at what you should be eating like up to the minute before the race. And it's like, you have experience, you have, you know, if obviously if your nutrition's not on point, you can have some issues, but I feel like people just overcomplicate everything. Mm-hmm. And looking at like, you know, you need to taper this much, or if it's, you know, you can't increase your volume more than 10% every week, otherwise you're going to get injured. And kind of looking at like on a more simplistic level of like, what do you actually feel like doing? Do you feel like, you know, do you feel like eating pasta tonight is the right decision for you? If it is, great. If it's, you feel like eating a burger before your race, I don't think it's going to make a big difference. You know, you know, maybe you'll have, you know, but at the end of the day, if you're happy and you're having fun in the process, great. Like for me, it was a big thing was like, you essentially, we wouldn't be drinking beer or having any alcohol like the whole season. Or, and it was just like, I'm not a big drinker by no means, but like the social aspect of it and being able to go out with the group and having a beer was just never really on the table. So kind of, you know, just relaxing, chilling, and if you need to have a pint before your race, I don't think it's gonna make a big difference either.
That's what
you
I know?
Do. Yeah, I mean, I've been, yeah, I before lining up for the 65, I bumped into a buddy, and he was just, yeah, just bag of chips and a couple pints, and he was like, yeah, it's my pre-race routine, works for me. It was like, great.
Yeah.
You know, but back in my day when I was doing track, it was like, oh no, if you're drinking, you're not going to be winning.
Mm-hmm.
And like associating those false beliefs around like behavioral patterns, it was just like, it's daunting, because you essentially, when you become a track athlete, you usually feel like you can't do anything. It's like, you can't drink, you can't, you know, you need to get to take a cold bath every bloody day.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, some things might work for you, some things might not, but it's kind of doing what you need to do.
Do you have any like tips you would give to like, because I know you're leading like a, now you're coaching a group in Voltaire.
Yeah.
Is there any tips that you could give to like maybe not beginner runners, but maybe more intermediate runners?
Yeah.
And anybody like looking to bump up to the next distance, whether it's 5 to 10 or 10 to 21 or
I think
the marathon.
I think ultimately is there's no shortcuts. You know, if you want to run a 10K, you'll need to put a bit more volume. If you run one 10K once and never run it again, okay, you might be able to get away with it just kind of going cold turkey. But if you want to have some consistency and some longevity in the sport, having a good nutrition will help. Having a good night's sleep will help. But at the end of the day, it's, you know, putting in some time between running and recovery. And ultimately, it comes down to those two variables for me. If you're recovering properly and you're putting in some decent mileage, everything will kind of gradually come together, and it's kind of having some consistency in that running plan, not only consistency, but some variability as well, that you can kind of balance, you know, volume with intensity with those two main variables, and then having a fun group or a fun time doing it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not rocket science, but those are the kind of the main variables for me: sleep and or recovery and volume.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so whether how you go about that, I think, is going to be highly individual. If you can't put as much volume, you prefer putting a bit more intensity, okay. I think that's kind of a conversation to have with everyone, and what kind of, how much time you can commit to the sport every week, and how you like doing it. Are you more of a faster type person, or are you a little more slower and you want to take your time doing the 10K? You just want to get across the line. You want to perform. It's all going to be individual characteristics that can kind of modify the training plan from there.
Right.
But
what is that? What does recovery look like for you? And like, what does nutrition look like? And
yeah. That's always been kind of an ongoing process. I've experimented a lot with nutrition. I think I'm a vegetarian or a pescatarian, depending on who you ask. So I don't eat meat. I eat cheese. I dabble if someone's eating a hot dog, and I might ask for a bite every now and then, but like very rarely. I never really buy meat. But is that, the path for everybody? I don't think so. It's just, I have my reasons for doing it. And, I've been following that, type of diet for 5 years now. But I think for me is ultimately, it's not seeing it as a diet. It's just a way of life for me. I like to eat, I like good food, and, I just don't eat meat. So that's kind of what recovery looks for me. And then the other aspect is sleep. Getting, your decent hours of sleep, good quality sleep, and, kind of removing yourself from any kind of high stress situations in the couple hours before going to bed. So to ensure you're actually able to go to sleep without thinking about 1,000 projects on the go and actually closing your eyes and falling asleep. Those are going to be the two main ones. I used to like spend hours a day just foam rolling and massaging. And I have all the tools. My coach was a huge fan of all recovery tools, and ultimately I use them now, but I kind of did a little experiment this summer on me, like going through higher volume builds and all that, of like just doing nutrition or eating well and going to sleep. And I didn't foam roll once. I didn't massage ball. I didn't take any of my tools out. I think I left them in Montreal even this summer, and because I was in Quebec City for the whole summer. And yeah, didn't do any of that. And did I get injured? No. Was I tight? Yeah. Was tightness desired? I don't know. It's like, it's one of those things where, yeah, it's my IT band's tight. But is it causing pain? It's like, no, it's just tight. Okay. It's meant to be tight. It's an IT band. Mm-hmm. So I kind of experimented with a few things, kind of taking my recovery more like bringing it to a minimal, to what it should look at a minimal time commitment. And ultimately it worked out for me. Will I keep doing that? I don't know. I have all these tools that are just lying and just waiting to be used.
Yeah. I think that's funny, because you get like those tennis balls,
yeah,
you get the rollers, you get all this stuff. It's like, but the ones that are the thing that's most underrated, I think, is some sleep.
Yeah.
And also nutrition. I think mm-hmm. that's a really big one, or two really big factors. Like, how mm-hmm. many hours of sleep are you talking about?
I mean, it's changing a little bit now as I kind of am finishing up a placement, going into a new career, but I always try to get, my minimal 8 hours of sleep. I usually get more, but I always try to, count at least 8 in my, on my daily schedule. And, but I don't really think about it too much. I'm just trying to make it part of my natural habits. And, reality is for me, like when I was running, I was like, okay, I can miss an hour of sleep because I need to foam roll an hour more, or like do these like trigger point or whatever that was. And it adds a lot of stress to your regular life. Cause like, no, I got to get fit this in. But ultimately it's like, no, you just go sleep, relax, and you'll be fine tomorrow. So kind of finding new ways to incorporate recovery and changing my recovery has definitely been a positive factor for me.
Cool. Any other things that you've discovered in your tests or?
No, I mean, you can always, like I said, you can always overcomplicate everything. I like to look at like the new gadgets, or, right now it's all about, the new thing in recovery now is the Hypervolt, or all those massage guns and the Theraguns and all those. And yeah, ultimately if it helps you, if you feel good with them and you feel like, it helps you, great, keep doing it. But does everyone need a Theragun now, or a vibrating foam roller, or, a ice roller? there's new technology that comes out every week or every month. And it's always a question of branding. Does everyone need that to spend $500 to be a good runner with and get a Theragun? No, it's ultimately it comes down to those, what I said earlier about training consistency and having fun doing it. So. Mm-hmm.
Is your physio practice going to be focused on runners in particular?
Obviously, from the start, I want to get more variability in my practice. I want to see kind of a bit of everything. I do want to eventually work a little bit more with runners, and because that's always kind of been a passion of mine. Looking into bike positioning as well, and kind of the impact of bike positioning, bike volume, bike everything, bike on injury risk as well. Mm-hmm. So kind of transitioning towards athletes, but always kind of keeping what I call the general population, if you want, in my practice as well, because I think it's important. And it's kind of what got me into physiotherapy in the first place. So, yeah.
Why did you choose physiotherapy versus other methods of therapy?
Yeah.
Like, you know, maybe osteo or mm-hmm. kinesiology, continuing on yeah. that path.
I think I was having that chat with a buddy of mine the other day, and I think ultimately I had a really positive impact with the physiotherapy in my life, and I had the opposite as well. So I've had like really great physios, and I've had physios I was like, I don't know if they're doing much for me. I don't know if this is actually helping. But when I met Wynn, he's a physio out of Victoria, so his name is Wynn Gimitrowski. He really inspired me to go in physio. But like a few years down the line, I also met a great chiro, and I was like, oh man, if I met you sooner, I probably would have been in chiro school right now. So I think it's just who you meet in your life. Some people just swear by osteo because they have a great osteo and they have a person that they connect with and that helps them. And maybe that'll inspire them to go into osteo school. But for me, I think ultimately it was just, I had a great physio and I was exposed to physiotherapy most of my life. Mm-hmm. And he's kind of the guy who kind of made me take the jump into physiotherapy school. But I think all professions bring, you know, at the end of the day, we're all in the market to make people feel better and perform better. And that's what we're here for. And that's doesn't matter if you have a physiotherapy in front of your name or a chiro, if you're helping people, fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You had some success this year. You won Bear Mountain, I think, right?
Yeah.
The
50K Bear Mountain. Yeah.
And then you won Hurricana as well. Yeah. Were those the only two wins this year? And
no,
were you expecting that kind of result? Or?
No, by no means. I started Bear Mountain. I had no idea about trail running. I drove out to Bear Mountain the day of, slept in a tent. It was pouring rain all night. And then I had no idea like what the depth of the field was or wasn't, or I don't even know if it was, you know, a great race still. But I ended up in the lead with, mainly because I was still paranoid about rolling my ankles on every rock, so I like wanted to have a clear sight. And eventually caught up to one guy who just really went out hard, and I caught him about 15K in. And then, yeah, I ended up in the lead, and then I was like, well, man, I'm still in the lead. What's going on? It's 40K. And then at one point I was like, okay, this is my race to win now. But I had no anticipation of being in that position, no idea I would have to make that decision in the race to be like, okay, let's push it. Mm-hmm. But ultimately won. Experienced some severe cramping from 40K onwards, and didn't think I would finish. But it's kind of fun to be in that place where just the unknown of like, maybe I'll get caught, maybe I won't. I have like no idea where everyone is. Mm-hmm. 'Cause that's the downfall of trail running, is like when the second runner comes in, they know how far ahead I'm in front, or the leader is, but you don't really have an idea of like where, how far back they are, especially if you don't have a crew with you. So, but you know what? I kind of kept it simple and just like, I'm in the lead. I think it's my race to win or lose at this point. So kind of mm-hmm. pushed onwards and happy with the win. And it kind of got me hungry for more. So what did I do after that? I did Hurricana. I did 50K at La Clinique du Coureur. Mm-hmm. And then, oh yeah, I did Quebec Mega Trail, the 50. So I actually won Quebec Mega Trail in the 50K as well. So that's actually funny because I just sent in my elite registration for the 110K next year.
Oh my, I was going to ask you what's next.
So I signed up for the 100. So I might actually, I don't know, there's going to have to be a bridge or a bridge to be filled between the 110 and the 65 right now. So
I was going to say, like, is there a fear? Like, do you always have that in the back of your mind because you've had some issues in the past with injuries? Or do you think you finally figured out that trail is forgiving for you in that regard, and like that you can still push, but in a way mm-hmm. that's safe and that will keep you healthy?
Yeah, I think trail was just a combination of so many factors that just worked out for me. I think it was just kind of quality of life. I was just kind of unhappy at the end running track. I wasn't really happy doing laps all out, and I was kind of finding it was a little bit hard on my body, but also just kind of hard on myself with performance, always wanting to do more. Like, I remember doing a mini comeback two winters ago, and like, I was before a race, I was just like puking outside, and I was like, what is going on, man? I despise every part of me right now for like allowing me to get there. And ended up running, I was in the second heat too. I was like, it wasn't anything that was going to be like, if I win this, it's going to be great. But I was like kind of wanting to be back to where kind of I was back in the day. But it's just really unhealthy for me and how I was managing every part of it. So after that race, I had opportunities to keep going, but I told my coach, I was like, no, this is done. I have no pleasure allowing myself to go there anymore. And I don't think I can do track and field without wanting to be where I was before. I don't think I can have joy in, you know, running anything slower than what I did before. And if I do come back in track, it would be to run faster. So a lot of people told me, it was like, well, that's a really unhealthy way to look at running and all that. But I was like, ultimately, that's kind of what I experienced. And it's, I know myself, and I won't be able to do it. So that's where like track or trail came in, because it was completely unknown. But also just like, I don't think I'm getting injured as much. I mean, knock on wood here, but I might get injured next year, and that's fine. Trail is brutal. I sprained my ankles probably 10 times this summer, but I have sprained my ankle so many times in my life that I seem to recover from them quicker. Mm-hmm. But it's just a combination of just actually enjoying running, and it's freeing to just be kind of in nature for 5 hours, and I'm closer to 12 next year when I do the 100. Mm-hmm. So, but it's fun as well, because it implicates like my surrounding, right? So I have my girlfriend this year that was crewing for me, and then I had one of my great buddies in Quebec, Sam, that was crewing for me as well, and they just developed such a cool complicity, like a relationship as well. Like, just like, he was on the horn duties to make sure that I could hear them, and then he was just so fun to come to every, you know, 10 or 12 K, that it implicates other people in your life, and you could kind of see that the impact of, you know, on different people as well. Mm-hmm. So it was just fun. I think what it comes down to is I'm just having fun running trail, and I wasn't having fun running track at the end. Mm-hmm. So
I do love that about like trail running as well. Like, yeah. I've done the 65 Huracana and 28 this year. I just paced my friend at the Bromo 160, yeah. My friend Jeff. Nice. And you're so right about that sense of like community, that, yeah. Connection that you have with people. It's like, you know, he got hurt at 95, yeah. The 160, and decided, you know, I'm gonna finish this thing. Yeah. He's going back for a second time.
Cool.
And we hiked for 40K or 37K, yeah. Or whatever it was. But the showing up at all those aid stations and seeing,
yeah.
People and seeing our friends and having them, yeah. There, it's like, it just added something to the experience, yeah. You know, and, yeah. Gave you something to look forward to within, yeah. Within the race, you know?
Yeah. That's the reality, even with road running, is like your families, I mean, or your friends are going to be involved in training in terms of like in your everyday life, just for social events. But like to be actually able to bring your people out to like cheer stations on a course, and you see them like multiple times, and they're, you know, feeding you or giving you water, or like changing your shoes or whatever. It's just, it's fun. It's like, mm-hmm. Yeah, gives them power, and it's fun to see them like actually being able to physically help you on the course, as opposed to mm-hmm. just cheering you on with a few signs.
Cool.
Yeah.
So you're clearly taking the step up in distance, I guess. Yeah. That's the next thing.
That was a big question I had this summer, and I was like, I had no intention to do that. And Sam just like, with my guy that was crewing me this summer, was like, after Clinique du Coureur, which was a 50K, I like, for the first time in trail, I was like, for 30 or 20K, I was just not there mentally. I was just like, I hate every part of this running right now. And then like 20K later, it was like back to being okay. I was like, okay. So I kind of like fluctuated, and I know that's part of the sport. And I was like, I was not sure if I wanted to do that for 110K, of like maybe having like a window of 50K that just doesn't feel good, or maybe even 100. Mm-hmm. So but I also didn't know if I could physically tolerate it. But we'll give it a try. I don't know. Just curious. I'm fun. I'm having fun right now, so keep it going. I don't know if I'll have fun during the 110, but hopefully, yeah. I do. Like, Charlevoix is just beautiful. There's, you start from, yeah. La Rivière Saint-François, you go up Massif, and then there's Sentier des Caps, Sentier de la Mistachibo. It was just a beautiful run. Mont-Saint-Anne is a little more rough, especially on the last 10, but it's fun. I mean, I had fun on the 6 on the 50, so I'm sure I'll have fun on the 110.
Some of these.
That's how it works, right?
Yeah, I think. Oh, geez, I don't know. I don't. I still don't comprehend. I can't comprehend anything more than what I've done. Like like 100K, 100 mile. Like, I just don't understand it. But hey, more power to you.
Yeah. Right? Everyone's been asking. So, have you run a marathon before? I was like, actually, I've never run a marathon. Run 50.
I've
run a marathon with it, but I was never actually. But that's my dilemma again. Is on road, and I'm not really having or. I don't really enjoy running on road right now. I'm like enjoying in trail. Yes, it's a bit average pace. It's going to be slower. And, but yeah, I don't feel like putting the training block for a marathon right now because I don't really have it in me. Maybe next year I'll be like, you know what? I'll finish off with
it. And you'll crush it. You'll just crush it. I know that for sure. It's going
to
be.
My coach tried to get me into signing up for running the Marathon des Petites Trains Nord this weekend.
Oh my God.
Like way back in the summer. And I was like, yeah, I could do that. And then like halfway through the year, I realized, I was like, no, I have no desire to put that right now in my, in training. Cause I knew that was going to have to be like more structured. I mean, you don't have to, but I knew it was going to be like that if I was, running it. And then, I just decided not to do it. And I was actually pretty happy with my, decision to actually go through with not doing it.
Well, it's always there for you, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, marathons go nowhere.
No, that's it. Yeah. So do you have any, like, my goal in marathoning is to run all the majors, for example. Now, like, entering these distances and really, you know, it's been your first big year in trail running. Do you have any dreams, any goals, any races around the world that you think you might want to do?
I think it's running or trail running, kind of like marathon. My girlfriend's more of a marathon gal, so maybe like, you know, having no specific goals, but allowing ourselves to maybe go on a trip where she can run a marathon and maybe I'll run an ultra, and allowing ourselves to travel that way. No specific events in mind. Right now it's the weekend, or the guys are running the Trail de la Réunion right now, so you know, like being able to go in areas that I've never would have dreamed of, explore backcountry trails where you can only really get through hours of hiking, and exploring the world that way is kind of like my ambition right now, but no specific races in mind. Obviously, as you're new in trail, the main one you hear is Ultra Trail Mont Blanc, but talking with a few buddies of mine about it, and they're like, you know, it's a race. It's not necessarily the only one, and there's definitely nicer trails or nicer areas or that you can definitely go to, so we'll see. Doing that one, maybe I'll try to, if I finish the 110, I'm technically eligible to run La Réunion next year, so maybe we'll see that. I'm supposed to do maybe a trail race or a 8-stage trail race with a buddy of mine in, what is it called, the Transalpine Trail next summer, so maybe I'll do that. We're kind of looking into a few options right now, but just allowing myself to travel and see places of the world I wouldn't really have explored, especially in the mountains, so that's the main goal right now, no specifics.
Give yourself a break after all that schooling.
Yeah, because actually it's fun because like actually this summer when I was looking at, I followed no training plan this year. I just kind of went for runs and just tried to keep an overall like look on my volume, but didn't run a single workout, didn't run a single, it was just like, go, I feel like running today, yeah. And then more days, just kind of adding that consistency a little bit over time and getting the pleasure of running again. But I have like no logs of anything I did this summer. I mean, I did nothing. I just did volume. I just didn't do any intensity, so. So I think that'll be the next step for me, is kind of like integrating that back into the routine, maybe doing it like a once a week tempo, and seeing where that takes me.
I hate you.
I think ultimately as well in trail is just getting more elevation as well. There's so many places and you can't really get that much in Montreal, but I was in Charlevoix and everyone was, you know, Jeff Cochon this summer did like a 24-hour Mont-Saint-Anne up and down climbing, and I was like, that's pretty cool. I mean, you take trail wherever you want in terms of training and make it what you want. Maybe I'll go up Mont-Rigaud for 24 hours. Yeah. I don't know how many reps you can get in.
Where are your favorite places to train in Quebec? Because, I mean, that's just one thing. Like, I always say it, like, Canada is so beautiful. Like, Quebec, the province we live in is so beautiful. Like, there's people feel like they need to travel to see beautiful things, but this, like, I was in Charlevoix a couple of years ago and I went for a bike ride and it was like, wow. Like,
yeah, I mean, honestly, that's what I last winter or last fall I did the Défi des Cinq Sommets with a buddy of mine. We did it, we went to Charlevoix for 2 days, we did all five in the 2 days, and it's really that moment that made me decide that I don't need to go back to BC. like, we have like beautiful mountains here. I mean, obviously it's not in no way comparable to the elevation that you get over there, But it's just realizing that we have like beautiful trails and beautiful terrain in our backyard. Now, in terms of favorite places to train, I'm not going to lie, the mountain, especially in Montreal, Mount Royal is just like, you don't realize how many small trails there is in Mont Royal until you get there. But I just moved close to the Arboretum and on the West Island, and there's some nice like single track trails, nothing crazy, but for me it's not really an area, it's just kind of being in the mountains or being in trails. Doesn't need to go up and down. It can be some nice flat trails that are just kind of, it's just enjoyable, it's peaceful, and yeah, so obviously we can't explore that much. I've actually never run in Rigo, so maybe that's, I hear a lot about it, maybe I'll go explore that maybe before the snow comes. And but yeah, just kind of exploring new areas, always changing. And it's the beauty of trails is you could, you know, you don't, especially when you run on the mountain, it's just like you could take a left turn or a right turn. It's not, doesn't need, always need to be the same. You could kind of make it a different run every time you go. And yeah.
Cool. What's your greatest accomplishment to date?
Oh man, good question. In terms of track, I think one of my proudest moments was running a sub-4 mile. I think that's kind of something that every athlete aspires to in the middle distance runners. And I kind of cracked that barrier. I think it was the same summer. I think it was in 2010. So I was really happy about that. I ended up running 3:57. And it was just kind of a special moment because I had just signed to Fresno State. And ultimately, my coach was there, and all the other coaches that had never heard of me were like, oh, who's this kid? He's coming to Fresno State. Why is he going there? We should sign him. So it was kind of like a happy moment where I was like, yeah, you guys didn't want me. See what happened. But and then the combination of my coach that wasn't actually coaching me at the time, because I was going there the following spring or following fall. So that was definitely a big moment. But I think right now is just the greatest accomplishment right now is kind of finishing up PT school. It's kind of been a goal of mine for the last 6 years to actually practice as a physiotherapist, and seeing that happen right now, being in my final placement where I'm actually able to, you know, see a decent caseload, and kind of expanding that over the next few months and few years, I think I'll definitely, it's kind of what I'm really building to right now, and I'm happy to kind of finally see it complete or near complete. Knock on wood. I don't think I'll get failed in the last week.
Yeah, hopefully not. No, I think you've worked hard now to kind of get there. And
yeah, exactly.
What do you think is harder, like all the training you've put into running or the schooling you've done for your career?
I think schooling is realizing that everything we know about the medical field is so, like, there's no certainty to it. So it's kind of, you know, it's challenging to always stay or up to date, or challenging yourself to always, you know, be up to date with current literature and all that, but also taking it and your clinical experience into mind. So it's hard to be on top of your game in physiotherapy. And I think a lot of time, and unless you're like really, it's kind of like running, you got to put in the time to do the training and keep doing the training every week and every month, or, and kind of keep growing as a physician or a professional, sorry. And yeah, so I don't think it's one's harder than the other. One's more passive. You can just kind of read and work with your patients. And sometimes that can be really hard too, because you're always meeting new personalities, new patients, and everyone will kind of respond to, you know, physio a bit differently. Some might not. Some, that's what, you know, that's the beauty of having multiple fields like chiro and osteopath and on and so forth. So knowing that, you know, you might not be able to help the person in front of you, it's definitely challenging. But being able to kind of refer them to the right people is even more rewarding sometimes than actually physically doing it yourself.
Right. Of course.
Yeah.
Is there somebody that inspires you or motivates you in particular, or is all this coming like internal
sources?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, honestly, we had a pretty good cohort of buddies that, especially a buddy of mine, same guy that crewed me this summer, Sam. I think we just kind of having someone to kind of push yourself in terms of what is currently being utilized in physiotherapy within our field, and challenging it and kind of seeing is what we're doing actually the right thing? Can we do better? So he's definitely kind of been a good motivator on that front, but also just kind of working with other professionals that, you know, are seeing positive results. Their patients are getting better. It's not one person in particular. It used to be Wynn, the physiotherapist out West. And by all means, he still inspires me to be kind of as good of a physio as him. But what I'm understanding more and more is that there's a lot of variability in the field of like how physiotherapy is practiced. And ultimately, everyone typically sees pretty good results. So like what it comes down to is just having good interpersonal skills and working with your patients towards their goals, and ultimately you'll be able to reach them regardless of exactly what technique or whatever you use on your patients. Mm-hmm. But just kind of the variety of the professionals that I've been working with have been pretty inspiring for on that front.
Cool. Yeah. What does the running mean to you?
Good question. It's hard to know. I think I realize what running is to me when I can't run. When you run, you feel like it's something you take for granted. And going through the injuries over the years, I think I realized that, you know, running is just kind of, it's always like almost like a meditative tool, and kind of creates that balance in my life. I know that when I'm just kind of feeling a little more stressed, a little more anxious about any situation, or a little, you know, just down, I know that I can rely on running to kind of give me that back, or give me that extra boost of motivation or extra energy throughout my day. So it's just kind of it's just a form of balance. As much as I love the performance aspect, if I break down running for me, it's just my go-to for balance and mm-hmm. my go-to for equilibrium. Especially as I was going through school, obviously a little more stressful than all that. And it's good to know that, you know, I can just go for 15 minutes or 20 minutes. I don't need, you know, to go for an hour and a half and just escape. But going for that little shakeout run, you come back and it's like, oh man, look at that. Where'd that energy come from? I'm feeling a lot better. So
give you an extra.
It's always been that tool for me. But also, you know, I'm not going to lie, performance aspect is definitely a big part of my life. And I like to, you know, it allows me to push myself in a way that I know that I can be a better version of myself, whether that's as an athlete, whether that's as a competitor. But I like to use running as, you know, a perfect example is last week or when I finished Hurricana. I mean, technically I finished first, but I finished first due to a disqualification of the first runner. Yeah, technicality. Yeah. But it was such a fun experience to be able to run with Alex for over 40K. And after 40K, I kind of had a little bit of a weakness and he kind of pulled away. And I finished the last 15 to 20K on my own. But it was just so fun to be able to use my competitive drive and competitive nature to just push him and push myself, because I had no idea we'd be running relatively that fast, because I went into that race with not really having trained for the last 3 weeks due to an Achilles issues, and ended up getting through the race with no issues. But just being able to use my speed and my fitness to kind of push myself and push other competitors as well throughout the line is a pretty fun moment. Because all the races until then, I had run the majority of the race alone. So it was fun to be able to be like, oh, all right, I'm pushing you, you're pushing me. We're kind of like we're in this together and we're running pretty fast. So let's keep doing it and see where it takes us.
Yeah, you're just racing.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, exactly. Racing's a fun, definitely an under-mentioned quality of running as well. It's just like able to push everyone involved in the race. And, mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's great. Where can people find out more about you?
So I'll be actually working as a physio as of next week, actually 2 weeks from now at Physiomentum in Boulevard Saint-Charles on the West Island. So I'll be there starting 3 days a week, Saturdays and Monday and Thursday nights for now. And then we'll kind of gradually build on that. And then I'm kind of also working on a few interesting projects, physiotherapy related for the next couple of years. That's pending. And then obviously I have an Instagram page that is pretty underutilized right now. We're working on a few other projects right now as well for kind of bringing a page where you can kind of find some information on trail running, injury prevention, and injury risk reduction mainly, and just kind of all things trail running and physio.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so that's going to be oliviercollin.physio on Instagram. I'm not a big Twitter guy. I know I should be. There's some interesting physios out there on Twitter as well. So,
do you have a name for the website, or is that not out yet?
Website's not out. We're working on a couple projects right now, but mainly going to be on Instagram for now.
Very cool.
Yeah. So, and Physiomentum has a for any injured runners out there or injured individuals. Physiomentum has a good website as well, and all booking happens over the phone.
And you're coaching too, right?
Yeah, I'm coaching at Trio Lac, which is, we have a small group right now in We practice every Wednesday nights at 6:30 on the San Lazal track, right by Westwood High School. And so I did my first practice there last week, and it's going to be going on all over winter. We're going to be switching locations for the actual winter period, likely going to be in Vaudreuil. And yeah, anyone that wants to join can join through Triolac. I think they have a few packages just for the Wednesday nights, or you can also sign up for a larger package with triathlon, coaching, biking, swimming, and the run. So cool. It's really everyone. It's a group for everyone. And I'm just kind of, yeah, decided to get into a little more coaching this year just because I think it's going to be an interesting adjunct to my profession, but also kind of diving into areas that I'm comfortable with but haven't really been exposed to as much. So it'll be an interesting process, I'm sure.
Pay forward a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's definitely something that we don't do enough. If I can help a few runners reach their goals, it's going to, you know, only make the ones you set out for yourself that much more valuable.
Amazing. Dude, yeah. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you, man.
We'll have to get a few trail runs in leading up to your 110 next year.
Yeah. I'm sure I'll be on the mountain more often than I am.
Maybe a little bit more structure.
Yeah, exactly. A little more structure.
Good stuff. Yeah. But yeah, thanks again for coming in, and keep having fun out there.
Thank you, Ben.
Take care. This episode is brought to you by Movember, an organization leading the charge in improving men's health. It's a fact. Being more active makes us feel good. So this month, La Rundown is dedicating each kilometer we run to Movember. Join our crew at moteam.co/WRG and help us raise awareness for men's health. Whether it's for prostate cancer, testicular cancer, mental health, or suicide prevention, we all know someone or have been personally affected by at least one of these illnesses. Show your support by growing a mustache, raising funds, or simply by being more active with us. This Movember, let's get motivated and move together. Thank you for joining us on this episode of La Rundown. We hope you enjoyed our show. Please make sure to visit us at imarunner.ca. You can also let us know what you think and follow us on Instagram at La Rundown. Now take what you've learned and run with it. La Rundown is a production by WRG Media, recorded in the historic RCA building in St. Henry, Montreal. Produced and recorded by Forrest McKay. Our executive producers, Leslie and Lindsay Woods. Graphics and illustrations created by Ryan Bondi. And hosted by me, Justin Pugliese.